Welcome to another episode of the Rick H Show. I am your host, Rick H. Today on this episode, we'll cover several things, you know, namely some New York things, you know, some New York teams, some New York sports. We'll have some fun tonight. So kick back, relax, get your comments and questions ready, get engaged, get involved. Get into the conversation. Get ready for episode 217. Here we go.
You feel that knock? I feel like Rocky in this one, baby. Let's go. Alright, check it. Blast from the past, back from the future. So if I pull the trigger in the past, know you and your future. I'm still hustling, still hugging the block. The referee to the shit, I'm still calling them shots. I can't be stopped, that's what I told you. I'm living my life like a box of Crayolas. I'm cutting up white, smoking that green. Purple color Benz, I'm still making this cream. I'm so sick, check my throat quick. My wrist light up a room like a handful of glow sticks. I'm like spoiled milk, the kid's gone bad. Then it's the menace when my pen touches the pad. Niggas is mad, but the ladies is glad. Yo, they rubbing up against me like this nigga is rad. Fucking two divas, drinking on sangria.
Bop, bop. Welcome to the Rick H Show. Welcome to the greatest podcast ever created, hosted by the greatest podcaster of all time, the undeniable myself, Rick Hero, and we're covering everything New York sports again today. Here we go. First off, I want to, before we speak about the New York Knicks, I want to give a shout out to the WNBA. They just had a fantastic draft class that's only going to elevate the league to higher standards. For the last few years, the league has put on amazing games, has created stars. There's been stars in the WNBA, but not as often as we'd like. So this draft class is being compared to the LeBron, Wade, Melo draft class in the NBA. Certainly, a lot of notable picks. You know, I think the LA Sparks had a great draft. I think Chicago had a great draft. And obviously, Caitlin Clark, the one everybody wants to talk about, Indiana had a great draft. Don't sleep on the New York Liberty, by the way. They drafted the first Dominican WNBA player. I'm going to be super excited to watch her play here in New York, represent the culture, and try to see if we can get the New York Liberty over the hump to win a title. It's going to be a fun season. I'm really looking forward to it. It just makes the game of basketball more intriguing, more fun. And some of the WNBA games are super exciting to watch. So if you haven't tuned in, watch a WNBA game and see what we're talking about. Now, Caitlin Clark, I think she made $87 million for Iowa. That's what she produced while she was in the school. And a report came out today, which they were talking about her rookie contract. So she was the number one overall draft pick, greatest scorer in NCAA history, and she is going to get just over $338,000 over the course of 4 years. So she'll earn $76,000 in her rookie season. She'll earn $97,582 on her last year. Now, compared to the men, now before we get into the argument, Victor Wembanyama was the NBA draft's number one pick. He went to the Spurs. So Victor's getting $55 million, signed a 4-year contract with the Spurs worth $55 million. $12 million for the first season alone. Now, 76,000 and 12 million, there's a huge disparity there. So let's break that down for you. Let's see what. So what was I want the exact number for this, because this is it's kind of it's shocking, you know, to see this. So Victor's getting just 11.9 million more than Clark in the rookie seasons. $76,000 is not a lot. Okay. $76,000 to play professional basketball, and you're clearly the star of the franchise that just drafted you. You're one of the faces of the league immediately. And for someone to be stepping into those shoes, I mean, endorsement deals, yes. People are going to say, hey, Caitlin Clark's going to get endorsement deals and all that. That's awesome. But the sport is paying her peanuts. And it shows the disparity between the NBA and the WNBA. It's going to be exciting to watch the league. They got a bunch of great players. Like I said, Chicago ended up getting they ended up getting Reese and the player from I forgot the girl's name. Can't believe I forgot her name. Man, and she's one of the champs, college champs. Camilla Cardozo. Angel Reese and Camilla Cardozo both went to Chicago. So pretty good draft, you know, pretty good. Overall, I'm excited. Would you guys watch the WNBA? I'm excited to, like, for this league moving forward, just as I am excited for MLS and all these sports that are growing, all these leagues and franchises that are growing. But $76,000. Imagine LeBron got drafted and he got paid $76K. Think about that one. I just don't see how she's not at least getting paid like $100,000 or $500,000 or something like that. So I know in baseball, league minimum for MLB, let me see, I think it's like $500,000 or $1 million. MLB league minimum salary. I was close. So it's $720,000 annually in baseball. So Caitlin Clark gets paid than the worst player on any MLB team. And she's by far a bigger star than they are. Hopefully the math starts adding up when endorsement deals come in and the league grows and she gets paid, and the women should start voicing about the disparity. Because, like, even in soccer, like, the national teams that go for the World Cup, the women's soccer team constantly winning the World Cup, the men don't even qualify for the finals or even get close to it, and the men get paid a lot more than the women. So it's a big deal in sports. So let's talk about the elephant in the room, O.J. Simpson. Rest in peace, O.J. I remember 30 years ago, this time, I was watching the New York Rangers in the playoffs and the New York Knicks in the finals. The Knicks, I think it was game 7 or game 5. I don't remember which one was the game, but I clearly, distinctly remember being 10 years old, big-time John Starks fan. Big-time John Starks fan. John was destroying Houston. And then we get the split screen. And we start seeing OJ being chased in that white Bronco. I clearly remember at 10 years old, like, man, this is something, you know, impactful. Like, they're cutting And split screen might be normal now, but in 94, that was like, whoa, I didn't even know they could do this. So they did a split screen, and I was watching the Knicks, which back then the televisions were a lot smaller, and there were like more wood than television. And you were watching like a really small side of the screen, and then the white Bronco chase. So as a kid, I remember watching that and thinking, why are they interrupting the NBA Finals? Don't they know the Knicks are playing for a championship? Don't they know that Jordan has destroyed us and this is our shot? He's not in the NBA no more. We're the best team in the league. I was upset. But then I understood what was going on, and I understood why it was so important. I remember watching the verdict in the sixth grade in my classroom. My teacher, Ms. Cronin, shout out to Ms. Cronin, shout out to Incarnation. She brought a TV in, and we all watched the verdict live. Now, as a sixth grader, I wasn't understanding, again, like why this event was like so dramatically important. And then as I grew up older as an adult, I understood those layers that I didn't understand as a young man. So rest in peace, OJ, right? OJ has passed. It's been 30 years since I was that kid in Washington Heights on 11 Wadsworth Avenue watching the New York Knicks play the finals. Then I saw Game 7, the infamous John Starks game. We only made two threes. And when we lost, it hurt. It hurt my chest. I was crying. I was upset. I was mad. Every feeling you could feel as a fan, I felt it that day. Terrible summer. I mean, the summer was good, but every day in that summer, I remembered, all right, we got to game seven. We need to come back and win this. We need to come back and win this. And in hindsight, I should have not took those teams for granted, because in the 90s, the Knicks were always in the playoffs. The Knicks were always good. They always had 40 to 45, almost 50 wins almost every year, you know, and I took that for granted. Then I saw them in the finals against the Spurs. We didn't have a shot. I don't care what people say. We didn't have a shot at all. And then came the darkness and the cloud over the franchise for so long. And to be where we are at this point in time, to have the roster we have, to the picks, the position we're in, second in the East. We have the best player in the East, in my opinion. It just feels different. You know, it feels like I don't give a shit who we playing. I know that this team is going to bust their ass and we're going to make a deep push. Now, I don't want to get ahead of myself. I don't want to jinx my team. I just want to see game one. If it's Miami or Philly, I don't care. We do have to exercise the demons, and it'd be great if we get Miami first round. Knock them out. Why? Because of the historical hump. You know, it's like Mike versus Detroit. Finally, the Bulls got over Detroit. Every team goes through that. And I think that it would be something if we play Miami and bounce them out. But I kind of have the same feeling all New York Knicks fans have right now. We don't care who it is, when it is. We want that smoke. We want it from Philly. We want it from Indiana. We want it from Miami, Boston. We want that smoke. And there's like a quiet confidence about this Knicks team that we don't even have all our weapons. Randall's not there. Randall's not going to be there. Now, historically, he's not a great playoff player. So I'm not, you know, if you're watching, you could drop a comment on whatever application you're watching. You could drop a question. You could drop whatever you want. Get involved into this conversation, because we're talking Knicks right here. We don't have Randle. And I think that that's going to play to our advantage because we have the deepest team in the NBA currently right now. Only the Clippers, I would say, have a deeper squad because they got four legit ones on that team. But I ain't scared of the Clippers. I ain't scared of nobody. I know Jalen Brunson is going to go in there and do what he needs to do. Bogdanovich is getting into shape. He's going to be on the wing. He's going to be ready. DiVincenzo is going to be on the wing. He's going to be ready. Hart's going to do whatever he needs to do. Mitch is available to us. Hartenstein, the whole crew. McBride, oh, my God. I'm so pumped for this playoff run. I'm excited. Because there's a big, like, what if? What if this happens? What if this goes our way? And Milwaukee already, they're going into the first round without Giannis. So here we go again. Last year, I believe the cards fell into place for us to take advantage of, and we didn't. But here we go again. Giannis, no Giannis in the first round. Milwaukee could be in trouble quickly. If they get bounced out, I'm only worried about Boston. And then I don't think Boston's built like we are. I'm not worried about KP. I'm not worried about Tatum. I'm not worried about Brown. I'm not worried about those guys. Those guys ain't proven playoff. They all got a little shaky history in the playoffs. So let's see, man. Let's see where this goes. This is getting pretty, pretty interesting. And we haven't even started yet. So whether it's Philly, whether it's Miami, I don't care who it is. I want that smoke. Every New Yorker wants that smoke with whatever team, wherever, wherever. Look at this. Look at this. Shout out to Queens Hustle NYC, by the way. Look at this hoodie. Let me take my mic off. Just want to show you guys the work that they did, Queens Hustle. Look at this. Let me see if I can. Oh, my God. Boom. See this right here? You see that? So, I'm ready. I'm ready. I hope New York City is completely ready. And the Rangers. The Rangers, this could be. Could be the Rangers year too, you know. Not happy that they got the President's Trophy. Historically, doesn't mean much. But they get to have home ice, at least for the first two series. So let's see where this goes. It's an exciting time to be a New York sports guy. You know, Giants ain't that great. I hope they rebuild that whole team, but Mets are starting to play better. The Yankees, they have something. I'm gonna get to the Yankees and Mets in a little bit when I go into baseball. I'm gonna tell you guys exactly what the Yankees are missing, and Yankee fans already know what this is. What my response is gonna be. The Jets. Let's see if Rodgers can stay healthy, and very exciting times. Exciting for you if you're a Knicks fan and a Rangers fan. And then we have football. So hopefully we get both chips, baby. I'm getting a little greedy. It's been a while. Last championship was what was the last championship that we got? Oh, our soccer team won the MLS Cup. Might be the 2011. Is it the 2011 Giants? Last major championship won by New York. Oof, it's a long time. That's a very long time. So let's see. Let's see how this plays out. I'm super interested in it. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about baseball real quick. Yankee fans were super excited. They were 10-2. They were thriving. And baseball kicked in. So the issue with the Yanks historically for the last couple of years is One plain, simple solution. Manufacture runs. Manufacture runs. Get hitters. Okay? Hitters, right? Soto, great trade, great move. That's perfect for the Yanks. The problem is the rest of the lineup, including Judge, become home run, strikeout heavy guys. So you're going to go into these slumps where those bats go cold and you're not generating offense. So you need to also, when those bats are cold, have two or three hitters, like 300 hitters, that have a little bit of pop, which I think Torres, Volpe, and Soto, they should be those guys. And LeMahieu, but LeMahieu shouldn't even be on the Yanks. They should be those guys for the Yankees. But the Yankees need to get a hitter that bats for average, moves guys over, sets the table, you know. So when those big boppers come on, there's home runs, but they can also manufacture runs. Then the Yankees need to play the bases, run, steal, you know, go back to fundamental things. Everything cannot be a home run. That is their issue. That's what they're going to run into. If the bats go cold for a while, they're going to go into a really bad streak and a really bad losing streak. When the bats get hot, they're going to go into a hitting streak. But it seems like Judge is turning it around. That's the good news for you guys. And it seems like Volpe is really on a really good start. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on. I like the fact that the Mets are starting to win some games. They're trying to show some life. It's only April, like I told you guys before. A lot of Yankee fans were panicked, were celebrating way too early. I didn't panic. It's only April. You don't win anything in April. But you could position yourself for a nice run if you get a nice little record coming out of April. But if you dig a big hole in April, and you, chances are you might not come back from it. So very weary. But the Yankees, I think they'll be fine. They just – the hitting again, the base work, that's what they're missing from their offense. So that's my little thing about baseball, because it's very young, the season, you know. Still a lot of baseball left, still a lot of scenarios that are meant to happen. You know, the Yankees are 12-5 first place, and the Mets are 8-8. They're back to 500. They're 2.5 games out of first place, and they beat Atlanta. They took a series from Atlanta. So things are starting to improve for the Mets, and things are, you know, they've been good for the Yankees so far overall in the season, but it's been a lot more often. They've been losing some games recently because of the lack thereof hitting from the other New York team. So, but yeah, super excited about the WNBA, the season coming up. Super excited about the MLB season to continue to develop and continue to progress. And just want to see some of these matchups already. The Dwight Gooden number retirement, Don LaGreca said, God must not be a Mets fan because he rained on Doc on his own number retirement. that was crazy. But that was nice to see. You know, I said it a couple episodes back. So one of the things the Mets need to do is we need to create a culture. We need to history. We need to build the team. We need to sign our own homegrown guys, keep them. You know, we need to develop what the Mets are, because they're right now, you know, there's Tom Seaver, who we got rid of, That's what they've always been. And then we sign guys that are over the hill. We need to get away from that. And I think the trade deadline last season was fantastic. I think us getting younger, developing young guys, getting the right young guys as well, signing them to long-term contracts like Atlanta has done, is the key to getting it done and developing stars. And when you develop those stars, re-signing them and keeping them, and just create a winning culture. And the first step to creating a winning culture is competing and winning in your division. So that's step one. Play the season, compete, win, get into the playoffs. Step two is compete, win, get into the playoffs, get experience in the playoffs. Step three, compete, win, get into the playoffs, NLCS, get over the hump. So it's a long road for us, but we finally have an owner that's willing to spend money. And we allegedly finally have a president of baseball operations. I mean, I don't see what was the big deal about him. Honestly, I don't understand why everybody was crazy about him, why the Cohen wanted him, and why we brought him here, why we paid him like that. I don't see it. I so far I'm not thrilled about any of the moves that he made. That's the first thing. Second thing, this offseason was horrendous. If Seve pitches good, that's probably going to be like the best move he made. Harrison Bader, I like him as a player. It's a nice little pickup, but he's not a altering or changing of a franchise type of move. So this guy has got a lot to prove, right? Like when Leon Rose took over the next job, he made some horrendous moves in the beginning. You know, I gave him time. But Stern, I don't see it. He did nothing with Milwaukee. Nothing. Milwaukee didn't go anywhere. So why are we so high on this guy? Let me not go too crazy on my own guy. But let's see. Let's see what he does for us as a franchise. Well, that's it for today. It was a quick one today, 30 minutes. I had a few things I had to cover. I'll be back on Thursday, same time, same channel. Like, subscribe, share, follow, all that great stuff. If you want to be on the show and you're commenting and you want to come on the video, I can send you the link and bring you on. Pretty soon next week, we'll start having some guests. I'll start announcing those shortly. We got a couple guests already booked up for the next couple weeks, so it should be fun. I'm happy that I'm back. I'm happy that I'm here, that I'm doing this live, and I'm happy that I get to interact with the listeners directly. I'd rather do this live than the way I was before. It's just my preference. Plus, the subject matter, which is sports, is something that's happening constantly, so this constant content to film and this constant game to dissect and this constant stuff to talk about, which I didn't even talk about UFC 300, which I said the match, the fight of the night would be Gaethje and Holloway. And what happened? I know MMA. Really quick. UFC 300 card, very good. Dana did a great job. I was a little down on the main event. I felt like he should have got like a bigger fight, but you know, okay, that was okay. Pereira looks like a monster at that division. He made quick work of Hill. It was pretty cool because he got kicked and Herb Dean was going to stop the fight. He was like, nah, don't pause it. And then boom, knocked him out right there. He wants to fight a heavyweight. I don't think he should do that. I think he should have another fight at 205 and defend the belt one more time at 205. So that was phenomenal. Kayla Harrison is here. and she's here for some chips. So if you're a 135er or 145er UFC woman, and like, first of all, nothing against Pennington, but she won that belt, whatever, cool. Like, she's probably going to be the, I'm going to get killed on the internet for saying this, but the boringest and shortest championship reign in the history of that division. You know, I don't want to knock Raquel Pennington. She's been doing this for a while, but I don't see the it factor. I don't see her as a great fighter. I think there was a lack of talent in that 135 division for a while, and now, you know, she rose to the cream of the crop. Julieta Pena, I just see a lot of pressure, a lot of takedowns. Nothing impresses me of her. I was thoroughly impressed by Kayla Harrison. Her judo is insane, just like Ronda's was, but she could throw a little, and that ground and pound is crazy. So that 35 division, get ready for Kayla Harrison. Figueiredo choked out Cody. Like I said, it, Kobe's done. That chin is, you know, I like Cody Garbrandt. It's just, he's been knocked out too many times. I don't think he'll regain that championship run like he did before. So, you know, much respect to him for going back into the cage as many times, but I don't see it. I knew that was going to be quick work for Davison. Aljo, I'm not really, Aljo's not. Aljamain Sterling is another guy that he was champion, but yeah, who cares? Like, who's contending? Come on. I couldn't wait for Aljo to lose the belt. And he's from New York. I don't know. Something about him just rubs me the wrong way. And I don't think he's like a real, like, star. Like, I don't know what I, he just, I don't see it again. So I'm not a fan at all. What else did I enjoy besides Max Holloway? Because I'm about to go on a 20-minute rant on Max. Because I saw most of the card was up and down, was amazing. I was very surprised by Charles Oliveira's performance. He couldn't figure Armine out. Like, that was an interesting fight to me. I really was surprised by the outcome. I really was surprised by everything. I that was the only fight I got wrong, actually, from when I picked the fights. Very surprised at Oliveira's performance. And it worries me a little bit because is he on the decline? Like, what's going on? He's been a little lackluster, you know, lately. So with UFC, these fighters have like a window where they're unbeatable, and then, you know, they run into that wall where they'll win one, but then they'll lose six and then win another one. And then it becomes time to hang it up. But we'll see what happens with Charlie Oliveira. But Max Holloway is really, he's that guy, right? So for those who don't know who Max Holloway is, Max Holloway is an insanely talented featherweight who fought at 145, fought Conor McGregor when he was way too young. He fought Poirier too, I think, when he was young. Let me look this up because Max has always been my guy. And I'm going to make my case as to why I think Max Holloway is the greatest featherweight of all time. Much to people's opinion of about it being Volkanovski. So Max has got a loss to Poirier, a loss to Dennis Bermudez. This was very, very early on. A loss to McGregor. Then he lost to Poirier again, and then he's, the other three losses are all Volkanovski. So Max is 26-7. Let's dissect his wins, though. He beat Korean Zombie, Arnold Allen, who was like this prized prospect, Yair Rodriguez, Calvin Kattar, Frankie Egger, Brian Ortega. These are title defenses. He was the champ. Okay. And he beat Jose Aldo twice, Anthony Pettis, Ricardo Lamas, Jeremy Stephens, Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, Andre Feely. Those are his wins. He's got major, major wins against stars in the UFC. And just the fact that he beat Jose Aldo, who hands down has to be one of the greatest featherweights of all time, twice back-to-back in the same year, gives him that nod over everybody else. And I want to point out here that the fight with Poirier was at 155. It wasn't at featherweight. So it continues to prove my point why he's the best featherweight. Now, he fought Volkanovski three times. In my personal opinion, because it went to the cards, Max beat Volk twice. So if you watch the three fights, you'll see, oh, okay, Max won this one. Volk won this one. Max won this one. The last one, I think Volk won. But the first two, they were close, but I would have gave it to Max. Yeah, Max has to be the greatest featherweight of all time. Then he moves up to 155. He's fighting Gaethje for the BMF title. Baddest motherfucker. He's clearly up. He's clearly won four rounds out of the five already. And he asks Gaethje in the last 10 seconds, come to the middle of the octagon and let's throw hands. Knocks him out with a second left. If you have not seen this clip, go watch it. It's probably one of the greatest knockouts I've ever seen. And I've seen the McGregor on Aldo. I've seen the Yair with the back elbow on Zombie. I've seen the Cody Garbrandt rising from the bottom. I think that was on Munoz. I've seen some beautiful, beautiful knockouts. I've seen the Ngannou on Overeem. That was insane. But this was pretty good. Oh, the flying knee from Masvidal is another good knockout. But this Max knockout is a highlight that. You know, after that fight, there was two other fights, and I just was like, it took all the energy and all the life out of me. I just was so shocked and so stunned. Like, but shout out to Max Holloway. That's my boy, man. I've always been a big fan of Bless. That Bless era is still here. Hopefully, he gets a shot at the 55 belt. If not, he could go down to 145. I think everybody ducks Max. And Max was the one that said when he lost his belt and he lost the third time to Volk, he was like, I'm gonna just become undeniable. So they can't deny me of a third shot. They can't deny me of a title shot. They can't deny me of this. And he took on the rising stars of the UFC and he knocked them back down. So let's give Maxie a shot. Ilya don't want that smoke. Max is willing to go to Spain to fight him in Spain. He don't want that smoke. Islam definitely don't want that smoke. Because that's easy work for Max. That Sambo style wrestling with Max's takedown defense, I think that's, it's a nightmare. Because Islam is no Khabib at all. And he's vulnerable. He could get hit. He takes a lot of risks. Max is an excellent striker. So Max could, if he wants to, go on a run, win one belt, and then go try to get the other. He could still do it. He's still young. So that's it for me on UFC 300. Like I said, I'll see you guys Thursday, 8:30. Tune in. This is going to be a regular for us, Tuesdays, Thursdays, same time, two episodes a week. Engaged audience, ask questions, live commentary, live conversations. Let's do this. Let's talk sports the way they should be discussed. Let's have these conversations. Shout out to Queens Hustle New York. Thank you for the hoodie. It's super fly. They also sent me this one real quick. Let me just... It was on my desk, my work desk. Queens State of Mind. I love Queens. Queens got the best rappers, so, and the best point guards. We'll see you. I'll see you guys on Thursday. Enjoy the rest of your night. Take care.
You feel that knock? I feel like Rocky in this one, baby. Let's go. Alright, check it. Blast from the past, back from the future. So if I pull the trigger in the past, you know you and your future. I'm still hustling, still hugging the block. The referee to the shit, I'm still calling them shots. I can't be stopped, that's what I told you. I'm living my life like a box of Crayolas. I'm cutting up white, smoking that green. Purple color pens, I'm still making this cream. I'm so sick, check my throat quick. My wrist light up a room like a handful of glow sticks. I'm like spoiled milk, the kids gone bad. Then it's the menace, my pen touches the pad. Niggas is mad, but the ladies is glad. Yo, they rubbing up against me like this nigga is rad. Fucking two divas, drinking on sangria.